Hi, my name's Dave Cooper, and I want to welcome you to another Alternative to Rehab podcast. Now, in this short series on method, I want to talk to you today about something I call the MOT, or moment of temptation. This method will give you a practical advice on what to do in those moments where maybe a compulsion comes, a sense that you have to go back to your addicted lifestyle. Maybe it's just a casual thought, but whenever those things come, they can be very troubling. And so this method offers you a practical system of dealing with that. Now, the moment of temptation, the MOT, is defined as the point at which the addict is tempted by a casual thought or a compulsion to use or to act out. That's what we mean by the MOT. The method itself represents another step in the shift away from what we call the medical model, which sees these moments as symptoms of an illness or mental condition, and therefore has no need to explore them further. The systemic approach I've developed sees these moments as having a perfectly understandable cause. What's more important is that these moments can be extremely useful in developing your recovery. Instead of being afraid of these moments or worrying about them, this method will show you how to use them and grow and develop your character. So what mostly happens at these moments that I'm talking about, these moments of temptation? What usually happens is that the addict looks forwards, goes forwards into a success and failure pattern of will I, won't I, should I, shouldn't I. It ends up in a typical addiction battle, often because success has been too narrowly defined as staying clean, I just must stay clean at all costs. Now, the natural reaction to the moment is to fight it. I understand that. It's common sense. But I often ask my clients, how often have you won those fights? You know, your brain is much stronger than your mind. Fighting with your brain is probably not going to be a good idea. So I suggest something very different to your common sense. I suggest looking backwards. Let me just reiterate that to make sure you got it. Instead of looking forwards, I want you to look backwards. In order to understand the idea behind this counterintuitive move, we need to look at patterns of behaviour and how these become such strong habits and fixed in the unconscious. Looking backwards to go forwards. So, what's happening in these moments? Well, the best way to understand this moment is to understand the way that conscious strategy becomes unconscious reaction. Let's understand how conscious strategy becomes unconscious reaction. Years ago, one of my teachers described it to me this way, and I've kept hold of this idea ever since. They described arriving at a building that has a lawn in front of it. Now, imagine you're in this position, and as you look at the layout of the lawn and the path, you realise that it's going to be a lot further to walk all the way around the lawn on the path. So you make a decision that it would be quicker not to walk around the lawn, but to go straight across it. Now, at this point, we have what we would call a conscious strategy. You've decided to go this way. You've looked at the situation and you have made your choice. Now, this takes place as a choice maybe many more times. But look at what happens every time you do it. Every time you make this choice, you wear away the lawn until what happens? It becomes a path. Now, the path itself then starts to suggest the quicker way to the building. You're no longer needing your conscious strategy. It's slowly turning into an unconscious reaction. That's what's now taking place. The strategy of walking across the lawn literally descends into the fabric of the lawn. That's the way your mind has influenced your brain. So how does this relate to the way you think? So in our little metaphor of arriving at a building there, if the building is you feeling good and being in the right place, and walking around all the lawn and going along the path is the legitimate way to that feeling, then walking across the lawn is the way you learn to get there quicker. At some point early in your life, you learned that you could do something or take something that made you feel better quicker. As you continued to make these choices, your brain, which, by the way, makes no moral judgment on what you do, learned this is what you wanted. Eventually, your brain reacted every time you felt something bad or uncomfortable and helped you by offering you this same thing that made you feel better. Now, of course, your brain is lightning fast and does this faster than you can possibly recognize. Now, the more certain your brain became that this is what you want, the faster it did it. And after several years, the path is now fully formed and the choice is lost. Turn your compulsion into an alarm clock. Now, I want to invite you to think of your compulsive moments as an alarm clock going off. You know, one of those old ones with the large bells at the top are the best for this. Let's just anchor that in now by saying, just see this alarm going off every time you have any thought about using or acting out. Even just casual thoughts about drugs are the same. What I want you to do is to see that alarm bell going off every time. This will then serve to tell you to take a look at what just happened. Remember, we're looking backwards, not forwards. The hypothesis is that what has now become a lightning fast or unconscious reaction actually started out as a conscious choice. So remember that we're always working with what is between our ears. Every time you thought or felt something unpalatable or unpleasant, your brain learned to protect you. As you developed this belief that anything unpleasant or painful represented a real threat, your brain developed a reaction that kept you safe. This is the basis of what we are now calling the triggered moment. Eventually, the brain, which is lightning fast, does this automatically. One of the main and quickest ways your brain has of keeping you safe is the idea of using drugs or acting out in a way that comforts you. Your brain uses this strategy more and more, and after many years of practice, this using thought now appears to come from nowhere, but it doesn't. Your recovery work is to practice looking back at this thing you've trained yourself not to see. Now, by taking the time to look back, you will find something that you believed, maybe a long time in the past, you could not cope with. This could be a few moments before the temptation or compulsion, or it could be up to a few hours before, and can be triggered by any of a thousand things. Anything from the tone of someone's voice that they used, or the way someone blanked you, or just a depressing thought you had. So please do not expect to see this thing instantly. Remember, you have trained yourself over years, maybe decades, not to see this. What's more likely, and becomes a big clue to the truth of this idea, is that you will initially draw a blank. The first time most of my clients look back at these times, they often find they just have no memory. I ask them and they say, oh, I can't remember. I say, what were you doing just before you had this thought? They say, oh, I've no idea. The fact that you cannot remember what was happening just before the compulsion is your first clue that the right half of your brain was dominant at that moment and that something was happening that you did not want to look at. More of this about this hemispheric thinking in a short while. I want you to think of this as a process of bringing something that is behind you around to the front, into the visible spectrum, if you like. You're making something visible that has been invisible. Your part or child believes that they cannot cope with this thing, but your adult will cope easily with whatever you find. The important thing is that you open your mind to this idea. With practice, you will eventually see it and process it. Now, you may even get to a point where you remember those times in the past when you consciously changed your thought pattern to a more pleasant or exciting one. Those early days of acting out on the internet or using drugs for fun. Eventually, these things become connected as your exit changes slowly from a choice to a need. Now, these processes sometimes take years to drift down into the unconscious before emerging again as reactions that seem to come from nowhere. Let me give you a case example to help you understand this whole process. Andy and the Moment of Temptation. You know, it was many years ago now when I was working with a young man I will call Andy that I first saw the power of using this idea. We were sitting in his flat and he was explaining to me the latest alcoholic binge and why he'd not been talking to me for the past few days. "I don't know what happened," he said. "I was just walking down the road and as I passed a pub, I just had to go in. I couldn't stop myself. I suddenly found myself halfway to getting drunk." Now, his belief there was typical of many. You may have had an experience or many experiences just like it. I asked him to take himself back to that day. It's important here to spend a few minutes really locating the moment. Just using simple tools like what he was wearing and what the weather was like, what time of day it was. Importantly, I took him back to just before he found himself in the pub. Gently questioned him while his eyes were closed. He suddenly remembered seeing someone. "Who was this?" I asked. What Andy said next has informed my practice ever since. "Oh, it was a guy I'd been friendly with in the past. I think we fell out over something. I looked over to him. I was feeling like we could talk again, but he blanked me." Now, Andy had no memory of this happening before this moment. I asked how this thing felt, and as Andy located his resentment and shame, he started to understand how he had developed this method, this strategy for changing his state by reacting to his bad feeling with this compulsive type of thought. It was a real eye-opener for Andy, and it will be for you too. Remember that our process is awareness, acceptance, and action. So first make up your mind to raise your awareness. Allow yourself to know what it is that bothers you, what upsets you and why. What you don't want to deal with. It is in this area that your moment of temptation was first created. So here's the process. In your childhood, you first developed gaps in your awareness because you didn't want to face or deal with certain things. These became what we call blind spots and include things like resentments and fears, offences and shame. Next, you came up with against these things as part of your day. You couldn't avoid them. Finally, you developed a full-blown moment of temptation as you learned to use an exit from your life when things got difficult. This could be drugs, as I say, or alcohol or any kind of acting out. So the addictive cycle is then in full swing. Your choices then become more drug use or the desperation of fighting off this temptation. Now, it may shock you to think that you could keep such secrets from yourself, but believe me, it is very common amongst addicts. It develops over many years, and drugs and alcohol, as well as gambling and internet gaming, often provide exits that seem to work so well in the early days that it feels like you have your answer. Of course, this leads to even more ability and speed at hiding these things from yourself and by quickly changing your brain chemistry to excitement. I've worked with lots of people who've said to me things like, "Oh, it just comes on me and I can't fight it," or "I was doing so well and then I blew it." Now, these people did not yet know what they were up against. Before addicted people develop this awareness, it's honestly like boxing with the invisible man. You can't see your target and you don't know where the next blow is coming from. You will need a great deal of support with this practice. Remember that you have trained yourself not to see these things over years or maybe decades. You may be amazed to discover just how little you remember of the time before these moments. Blank spots sometimes build up. But with practice, you will develop an awareness of what you have been afraid to look at. As a child, you believe that you could not cope with these things, but as an adult, you will know that you can. Now, I didn't want to leave this subject without saying something about when these MOTs are most likely to occur. Andy's example was one of those that we cannot see coming, but there are many that can be predicted once you know what to look for. So to explain this, I have to talk a little bit more about the brain, but relax, I probably don't know much more about the brain than you do. It's just that we need some theory at this point to make sense of this idea. So as promised, a little section on hemispheric thinking and the importance of it in your recovery. Hemispheric thinking really refers to the idea that your brain is in two halves, two hemispheres or halves. And if you've seen pictures of the exposed human brain, you will have noticed that there appears to be a gap in the middle. And this makes a separation between two halves. Now, this gap is known as the corpus callosum. And I bring this up simply to point out that we now know what the different halves of your brain deal with, what the different concepts they manage, and you'll start to see this as you think about this more. So why is this relevant to my recovery, I hear you ask? Well, the left hemisphere of our brain handles tasks such as reading, writing, speaking, arithmetic, reasoning, and understanding. It's all about logic, sequence, and detail. Now, when we speak or do arithmetic calculations, activity increases in our left hemisphere. Our left hemisphere tends to process information sequentially, one idea at a time. The right hemisphere, however, excels in visual perception. So understanding spatial relationships, organizing and recognizing patterns, things like music, emotional expressions, etc. It's also good at making inferences, you know, putting two and two together. Our right hemisphere also lets us perceive our real sense of self. Now, this becomes really crucial when we're thinking about moments of temptation. Why? Because once we knew which side this compulsive thought comes from, we're more prepared for it. So how do we prepare? By knowing in which hemisphere the danger lies. So, it's important to understand what sort of things activate the right side of your brain, as this is where the compulsion is going to come from. This is where your imagination is. This is also where you make meaning from events, such as Andy seeing the other person ignore him. And critically, this side of the brain does not have your commitment in it. That's on the left side. So your sense of order includes making sense of your commitment. And so when the right side is more dominant, your commitment to your recovery can be completely absent. So now you can start to see why you sometimes seem extremely vulnerable. If you can imagine an activity that closes down or shuts down your left side and wakens up your right side, and then you can imagine the moment of temptation coming, well, you've got no defense because the left side is asleep. So here's a list of activities and times you may be vulnerable. Now, I gathered this from working with my clients. Driving the car. You may not have realized this, but driving is a right-brained activity. It involves dealing with spatial patterns, you know, turning corners at the right amount, braking and speeding up at the right amounts. It's all about assessment of spatial patterns, as well as, of course, starting and stopping. Now, it's also an activity that becomes very unconscious and basically leads to a state of daydreaming. You know, that point where you learn how to drive without thinking about it. And daydreaming is a big part of the right hemisphere. Watching television. You may not have realized it, but watching television is another right-brained activity. One of the reasons we like it so much. It doesn't ask a lot of us. Especially dangerous, in my experience, is that telewatching that you're not really interested in. Again, it leads to a state of daydreaming and, well, You get the picture. Now you can add any other activity that follows this pattern, which activates your right side. Other candidates include internet surfing, being bored, or falling asleep. The list goes on, but once you understand the principle of what makes you vulnerable, it changes everything. That drive home from work now takes on new meaning, doesn't it? And hopefully now you can see this, how this connects with my other methods like the captain. If you think about having a hard day at work where your left brain has been really exercised, you get in the car to go home and what happens? Your left brain is tired, wants to shut down, your right brain enjoys the driving. Hey presto, we're off on another moment of temptation. So how does this process help your recovery and your growth? The practice is to learn how to switch on the left side of the brain. This is where your commitment to your recovery resides. It will quieten some of the imaginative voices from the right side, which offer you quick fixes. But how do you do it? Well, the answer is simple. You get out the same way you got in. If the right side is about imagination and the left side is about organization, you simply find an organizational task to turn your mind to. This can be something as simple as getting out your calendar on your phone and thinking about what you're doing later in the week. Some of my clients have kept a small Sudoku book on them for quickly turning on the left side. A crossword puzzle is another easy way. Just thinking about tidying your room, or maybe thinking about a shopping list or even a to-do list, will do the same thing. Your left side loves a list. Now, these easy-to-do behaviours turn off the right side, but get the left side's juices flowing. Some final thoughts. So, let me ask you, what have you learned about yourself, the nature of your difficulties, and your recovery practice in this method? Remember, no one else is going to do this for you. Be the captain of the good ship, you. And take responsibility for the MOT of yourself. The more you investigate these moments of temptation, the more your brain will pick up on the idea that it's okay to let you see these difficulties now. The more you see the difficulties your brain is protecting you from, the more you'll see that these things are no longer a threat to you. And the more you realize this, the more your brain will rewire itself to this new reality. So I want to say thanks for taking the time to listen today. Till next time, bye for now.